Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. One of the things that we've been tasked with, you and I, is to consider and, when appropriate, to adopt new ways of seeing things. We've been given so many false notions in so many areas of life, government, education, media, and health, for instance. The best we can do, in my humble opinion, is to keep an open mind and to continue to look for ideas and people that uplift and inspire you, for they are your fellow travelers in this great awakening that we're experiencing. Humanity seems to be emerging from the fog of deception. Our antennas are getting more sharply attuned to the truth. And the more truth that comes to light, the more confident we become in our path and in ourselves and one another. What are some of these new ideas that are emerging that can help elevate us? Well, we're going to cover much of this and more today with a man that I've had the great fortune to connect with recently. This could easily be two men sitting around the campfire talking far and wide about our shared future. And before we get to the episode, I wanted to share two memes with you that I think will help tee this one up. One is from my guest's website, a quote from the writer Timothy Ferris, who says, quote, "The specialist spends decades making incremental improvements, while the curious generalist consistently measures improvement in quantum leaps," unquote. Oh-ho. And finally, one from my own website, quote, "Truth is also seeking the seeker," unquote. Enjoy the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Ben Wuhrman. Ben is a fellow seeker of truth, a photographer, digital nomad, writer, and podcaster. Here is my interview with Ben Wuhrman. All right, I am here with Ben Wuhrman, photographer and truther, podcaster Ben Wuhrman. Ben, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It's great to have you on the show.
Tony, it is a wonderful pleasure to connect. I'm so glad that our friend Peruvian Bull got us together. A bunch of Seattle brothers are all finding each other on the interwebs, and it's happy to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was really excited. I've been eyeing your stuff on Noster, just writing excellent content about all kinds of stuff that I'm into and just doing a great job. So I was really excited for him to connect us. And I guess just to start with, maybe just give us a little bit of a background, like where you're from, where you grew up, what you might do for work. Where are you at now? You're kind of a nomad from what I understand. So just give us a little sketch of your background and what you're doing and where you're doing it from now.
Yeah. I can't even remember where you were originally raised, but I know you're in Seattle now, but I was born and raised in the Northwest, mm-hmm. Born in Portland, Oregon, then raised in on Whidbey Island, which is just about an hour and a half north of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And amazing, beautiful place to grow up. And I was one of the people who I really did appreciate it growing up. I know a lot of people there are just like, oh, this is like a boring farm town. There's nothing to do here. There's nobody here. It was really small, Cootville, where I was from. Mm-hmm. But I always loved it because there's so much nature everywhere. There's, you know, just where my parents live right now when I go back to visit, it's right down the street from the beach. Like I can literally walk down to the beach with my shoes off. And I can take my mountain bike out into the hills and the mountains and just go riding all day. And it's just a really cool place to grow up. Went to school at the University of Washington, right in your neck of the woods there. And after that, I got a regular full-time job for a short period of time and quickly realized I hate this. I don't like doing this. Mm. So I just started traveling. And you know, 2018, I have a little bit of a funny story for how I even got into traveling to begin with. I was living in Central District in Seattle in a townhouse with some frat buddies from college. And we were having this house party one night. And one of my roommate's friends had just gotten back from a 6-month working holiday in Australia. And so I chatted with him about this and we were both just, you know, drinking at the party and just, I'm just absorbing this guy's story and just thinking, man, this sounds so cool. And so literally in the middle of the party, like as I'm like drunk, I go down to my room, I grab my laptop, I come up, I, you know, just clear the beer cans off the table. And I literally sign up for this visa on the table, like in the middle of this party. I'm like, I want to go to Australia. This sounds amazing.
That's awesome.
And so the next morning I wake up hungover and just thinking, I don't regret that at all. I think this is exactly what I need to do right now. Let's go to Australia. So
right on.
A few months later, I'm on a plane over there. And man, ever since then, I was 2018. So it's been like, you know, 7 years of basically slow traveling, I would call it. I was never the type to just like go like one night per place or even a few nights per place and just keep moving around. I like to settle down places. So like that very first trip, I did 4 months in Melbourne, the city, the first city I went to Australia, and then 8 months in Queensland up in Cairns. Mm-hmm. So like from the very beginning, I just like to settle down and like, I just like to have my home move around every once in a while.
That's, you
know, I thought it'd give me a little bit of flexibility and sort of blended with, you know, usually like 2 home visits per year back in Couville, which is a great place to just recharge. And like I said, just, you know, stand on a beach, walk on a beach, go bike riding, just all the nature around the Northwest is just so great for just healing any of those, you know, months I spent in the city.
Absolutely.
And so I'm still doing that to this day, to be honest. And I'm just turned 30 in October. So I definitely do more and more think about, okay, like when's the next step of like actually settling down, getting married, starting a family, having that dream, like Bitcoin or homestead with all the meat I could ever ask for in my freezer and, you know, really locking in like good water quality and like a good filter for that. And like really being able to lock in these health things, because as I'm sure we'll talk about, I'm super into the health rabbit hole. How do you optimize your health in the best way possible? Mm. And some of them are so impossible while traveling. And what the biggest one for me right now in Argentina, where I am, has been water and just drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so freaking impossible to find anything that's not plastic bottles. I know how terrible that is. So like it's just been a constant struggle. And right now I literally can't find it anywhere in this town I'm at. So I'm drinking out, I get the biggest plastic jugs I can find and just cringe my way through these things, knowing how many microplastics are in those, going and like working out, sweating, detoxing as much as I can, grounding, trying to, you know, undo the damage. But you know, these are the trade-offs when you're sort of living a life of floating around in the abyss as you are exposed to the fiat world and all of its ridiculousness, and people just aren't thinking about health and having these things dialed in anywhere. In these parts of the world where people are, you know, more healthy than Americans on average, but still people just aren't thinking. Their bandwidth is still shrunk down by the inflationary environment we're in, with, you know, their money being stolen from them all the time. People are stressed everywhere. And that's something I've learned from all my travels, no matter where I went, which was, you know, Australia, New Zealand, Mexico, Colombia, Argentina, Guatemala, everywhere people are struggling. And so this is why I'm a huge Bitcoiner. I'm super glad that you get into that on your show a lot. Bitcoin is the solution in my eyes. And that's why I'm up to right now.
that's fantastic, man. You know, I the health thing, which we're going to get into, it's interesting that it goes hand in hand in the Bitcoin community. Like, it's not left out. If it was only Bitcoin as, you know, digital store of value and all these things, I don't think it would be quite as interesting for me. And we'll get into that. I want to start with the first question I had for you. But yeah, it's just, I love that Bitcoiners have a view of the whole thing, diet, health, like, you know, that they're clued in as to where we want to go with the future. And it's just really, really great. But I wanted, you know, you write quite a bit, like I do, about this kind of spiritual war that's been happening. And we still call it, you know, humanity on one side and the globalists or the cabal, or, you know, I've used the sociopaths. There's a lot of different ways to describe them. And, you know, a lot of us got banned for some of the things that we were saying on social media. Are you optimistic right now? I think there was a sea change, and, you know, people may or may not like Donald Trump, but it seemed like when he won the presidency this November, things started to move in a direction really rapidly. Things were starting to happen. And then, you know, here in the United States, as you can probably guess, half the country, or slightly more than half, let's say, since he won the popular vote, are very excited. I think they are willing to overlook certain things that they're not sure how they're going to come out, going, look, I think he has the country's best interest at heart. I think he's doing a lot of good things. And then you have this other large group on the left and even in the center who may be feeling like they're freaking out because the speed of what's happening is not what they're used to. I think you and I can handle things happening fast. It, even that being said, I'm like, whoa, what else? What's going on? You know, that was a fast week. But for people that have been really married to the status quo, this all looks like somebody is tearing the hell out of the status quo structures, which, you know, to be fair, are immensely corrupt. So it should be, you know, sayonara, like goodbye. We don't want that anymore. But there's a group that's still like, Trump's a dictator, Trump's evil, and everything he's doing is bad. And so we're kind of in this weird spot in this war where, you know, I feel super optimistic because of all the things we're going to talk about. But I guess I want to just ask you, like, are you feeling like things are going in a good direction? What has you optimistic? Where are we at? And how are things occurring down there in Argentina as well with all this stuff? Are they also kind of split between two groups?
I mean, short answer is I'm definitely optimistic. And I think that, like you, I know that you always talk about this on your show, how, you know, we have to be optimistic. Yeah. You can't really be down in the dumps and expect to win this thing. You know, we have to really dig deep sometimes to stay optimistic because there's a lot of dark things out there. And when you learn more and more about the dark forces at play that we are, you know, up against, it's daunting sometimes.
Yeah.
And there are some tough moments. I know that another one that you are digging into is a whole geoengineering chemtrails thing, that, you know, 5 millionth conspiracy theory thing that the conspiracy theorists were right about. That's happening. Yep. I can see it outside right now.
Yep.
It's literally happening here in Argentina. It's everywhere. You know, it's much better here than it was back home. Like in late January, I was actually stayed at, this was fun. I stayed in Seattle at UW for a week. I got an Airbnb just like a block away from the old frat house I was in at the University of Washington, just so I could like record some podcast episodes around campus, the place I used to study. And of course, like, it's just insane to think back at, you know, when I was, you know, 19, 20 in there, just having no clue about the world. And now I'm like looking with just completely fresh eyes everywhere, like looking up and just seeing, like, on my walk down to, you know, the Suzulo Library, there are just freaking trails all over the place in the sky. And all the kids are just, you know, looking down at their feet as they're walking to class. I have no idea what's going on. And another example, just like there's one really nice sunny day. I just immediately went to the quad and just like, you know, took my shirt off and just laid down like a starfish to get my sunlight, because I know that's really good. And people are looking at y'all weird because it was like winter time. Like, it's cold out. Like, why are you, you know, shirtless in the sun? That's crazy. Like, this is really good for you, actually. I know that whatever medical school teaching you're getting is terrible and you have a sunscreen deficiency or whatever. But that was just wild. And regarding the political points you brought up, it's so funny. Like, my politics have just been all over the place over the last several years. Growing up in the Northwest, I was very, very much, you know, hard left, blue, everything.
Yep, me too.
For the majority of my life, just like you. Mm-hmm. And I would say that finally started changing when I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. Like you said, that's like the really good core rabbit hole that branches off into everything else. Like, once you understand the money and the power and how the government operates and how fiat and the money printer of the central banking operates. So I went from completely blue to like, huh, this is all kind of crazy, sort of libertarian. And then for this last election cycle, I continued putting out the libertarian style context. That will always be my core, I think. Just like, forget about all these people. Like, I don't want to be led by anybody. I want to lead myself.
Yeah.
But internally, I was definitely kind of thinking like, oh man, things would be worse if Kamala won. So I hope Trump wins, just because, you know, I know that there are more awake people on that side that need a win.
Yeah.
And I will say it's now March, and he's done way worse than I thought he would. That may be a hot take for, I don't know what your audience feels about that, but just the way that the money is being spent, and, you know, the Epstein files continuing to be kicked down the road, and the JFK files, and they're like making new laws about, you know, anti-Semitism. You get deported out of the country if you question anything about Israel. And then you scratch your head and do a little more digging on that. Like, oh, like all of the Doge shavings times like a bazillion, they're like just sending this over to Israel. So the whole Israel thing has been like a new rabbit hole, which we can go there or not if you want to. I know that's like a whole different can of worms, but
I think we'll I think we'll save that for a part two, because I think that could be a really good one. But yeah, I've often scratched my head. It's like, why does Israel always get the preferential treatment with the money laundering, you know? And And I feel you, you know, there's times when I think it's dangerous to just say, oh, you know, the white hats have it, there's nothing we need to do. Because, like, for instance, to your point about the chemtrails and the geoengineering, the aerosol spraying, what are we going to do about that? Like, I know there's people like Cal Washington who are doing, you know, notice of liability, and they're doing all these legal things to get them to stop. And RFK Jr. has been on record saying, we're going to put an end to this spraying of the skies. He has said that.
And we're going to stop this crime is what he said on a tweet.
I know. And I don't want to be so high time preference that I expect everything to happen at once. Like, Bitcoin has taught me, look, zoom out, keep the faith, keep your vibration high, because my family freaks out over the spraying. Like, it'll be a beautiful day in Seattle, and all of a sudden you're like, damn it, look at that again, you know? And then
white haze, just white. And like the sun just turned into like a grow light.
Yeah, and Ben, you can point, some people, you can point to it and they will literally not see it. And I'm like, this has got to be the weirdest Matrix moment where I'm pointing and going, do you see that? Do you see all that spraying up there? And they'll look up and go, what are you talking about? I don't see anything. I'm like,
I heard it's water vapor. It's ice crystals.
Yeah. And you're like, no, it's not that at all. Like, look, I go stand here for like 15 minutes and watch what this does to the sky.
Or like 3 hours.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't.
It spreads
it
out,
doesn't.
Covers the entire sky. I saw this last night as I was like doing one of my podcast walks. I do like everywhere I go, no matter where I'm traveling, I try to end every single day that I can with not looking at the screen. I get on my phone and I put on like my most Reddit out filter just so I can, you know, see what I'm typing. I just listen to some podcasts, airplane mode always, and go walk around and just, you know, just get some blood flowing before I go to bed.
It's great.
Because I definitely have like a lot of grinding sessions on my laptop, like I'm sure many listeners do that are, you know, in this information war. I mean, last night, like literally the sunset was stolen. It was just completely sprayed over, just hazed out. And, you know, all the people just taking pictures for Instagram, like, oh, it's so pretty. Look, it's like the purple colors and this giant cloud that just appeared there out of nowhere. And like that night, like literally I continued walking through the night, the moon came out, and then that same cloud is like still going, covering up the whole moon. It's like, this is just, it's so intense. And I didn't really fully answer your question earlier. It's like, how do you stay optimistic? Like, it's impossible to not have those really tough moments. And I viscerally remember when I was really going down a geoengineering rabbit hole, which I want to throw a shout out to Daniel Prince before I go any further. He's the guy that really pulled me into it. He's another Bitcoin podcaster, awesome dude, fearless. But anyway, this was, when was this? Time's kind of blurring together. I think this was probably summertime, summer of 24, if I'm not mistaken. I was back home visiting family and just watching all these documentaries and going through the research and the data and really sort of putting the pieces together and realizing this is really a thing, and going out to like my favorite little nature walks in the forest out there. Like, there's so many cool nature spots in the Northwest, as you know, and just seeing it with very different eyes. Like, as you know, it rains a little bit through the leaves and you feel the rain on your skin. Like, I used to absolutely love that, but now I'm thinking, oh, there's fucking aluminum in this rain.
Yeah.
It's like toxic rain. And you're looking around at the trees and they're like all fucking like dry and dying. Yeah. And oh, you kind of realize like there used to be birds singing everywhere and butterflies everywhere and bees everywhere in my mom's garden. Yeah. And now there's like fucking nothing. Like, there's a few squirrels scurrying around and a couple of dead bees on the ground. They're all dead. They're dying off. They're being killed by all this. Like, and there are, they've actually tested the bumblebees and they are packed full of aluminum. And this is why you see bugs sometimes just like walking around in circles, acting wigged out and just dying everywhere. It's because they're really sensitive to that aluminum.
Yeah.
And it's going inside of us too. We're like, it's really, this is the ultimate test of your resilience. Can you make that realization that you are breathing in aluminum nanoparticles and like still be optimistic and happy? Like, that's a real test. And it will turn a lot of people away and make a lot of people go crazy. But I think, I'm sure you're in the same boat as me. Like, to me, I feel like I'm a pretty mentally tough, resilient guy. So like, if I don't just keep digging into this, who will, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we need the people out there who have the fortitude to do this, to do it.
Yeah.
And use every single tool we can to get the word out and spread awareness. And I, you know, there are definitely some days where I get really excited and see like really, you know, big pages start to figure it out, you know, when you see different social media accounts start to figure it out and they're posting about this, you're seeing the awareness growing and the tide is shifting. And I think that is a crucial part of this is, you know, like, how much do we trust the politicians? I don't trust them at all anymore. Like, I've gone completely back to like, fuck all of them. Like, you know, even RFK is doing a bunch of shit now that just doesn't make any sense compared to what he was saying before. So I'm back to just hating them all, which is honestly my happy place. I like hating all the politicians.
So that's great.
That's I'm back there. And I mean, I as far as solutions for the chemtrails type of thing, I'm sure we'll talk about this. Maybe this could be a transition whenever you want to, but just sort of the four emojis I have on my podcast. I think that all three of those, the Bitcoin, Noster, Stake, and Sunshine, I can lay out an argument for every single one of those, how those do lead us to the solution.
Yeah.
We can do that however you want to do it.
Yeah. We'll get into that. I just wanted to finish the geo engineering thing. Like, I don't know if you noticed, like, one thing I notice about it, because I go and run Green Lake, that's one of the things I do, it makes my skin kind of itchy if they've been spraying. Even if I don't see it, I can tell there's something in the air. There's aluminum, there's some sort of chemicals, because my skin will start to itch quite a bit. And that wasn't happening prior. And that here in Seattle, as you know, we've got homegrown psychopath Bill Gates, and he's one of the big proponents of, we got to dim the sun because of global warming. And it's like, come again? You know, I mean, he's on record. People say that's a conspiracy. I'm like, he talks about it quite a bit for it being a quote unquote conspiracy theory. And, you know, he's got a lot of money. And when I look at I'm surprised to hear that it's down there in Argentina so much, actually, because I saw a graph once and it looked like it was heavy west of the Rockies, but maybe that was just that month. Maybe they rotate around, and it can be really difficult to see who the hell is doing this and where did they get the okay to do this? Like, that's what I'm not seeing is, like, where's the debate? How are they just flying and dumping shit in the air? And people, there's no like accountability at all. It's just kind of like, no, we're doing this. Air is our jurisdiction and we can do whatever we want. It's a little weird to me, right? It's surreal, you know? But to your point earlier, to me, that's the litmus test, because it definitely puts me in a slight victim mentality, like, fuck these guys, these psychopaths, you know? And I don't feel empowered. I don't feel like we yet have a solution. So it does not make me feel uplifted. I'm still looking for a solution and trying to count on others that I may or may not be able to count on to help me with it, like RFK Jr. Right. So, let's tie that up, but I had earmarked that you had written that the four things that will save humanity, here we go, are Bitcoin, Noster, Stake, and Sunshine. Man, oh man, I could put that up on my wall. And before we get into the carnivore thing, which I want to talk to you about, because I want to learn something about it, because I'm not completely into that world, and I've seen your before and after pictures, but let's just touch on, you know, why you love Bitcoin and why you love Noster, because I feel like people are hearing about Bitcoin, and some are like, yeah, maybe, you know, they got to hear it a few times. I think they're starting to see the value because it's on the news. It's on, you know, Mad Money. I mean, people are talking about it. There's memes and it's all over the internet. But Noster, I think people are still like, what is that? You know, people still don't know what it is. So I guess I wanted to give you a chance to talk about both of them and why that's helping you to feel optimistic. And then we'll get into the Stake conversation.
Yeah, I mean, part of the excitement of all four of these things, Bitcoin, Noster, Stake, and Sunshine, that I've sort of chosen as my four pillars we're very new to all of them in the sense of people like really understanding them or knowing about them. And so, I mean, I think we're very early to Bitcoin. We're really, really, really early to Noster. Like, I mean, if you talk to 100 people on the street, none of them are 0 out of 100 are going to know about Noster. Maybe one if you're in like a very sovereign place that values freedom. But yeah, I mean, these are the solutions that we need. And what was your original question? Once more?
Oh, just like, how do you see that? How do you see the Bitcoin Noster thing playing out for humanity? I think I've maintained this over time that like part of humanity's, we're kind of charged with building. If we don't like the centralized, corrupt globalist systems, we need to build stuff that's decentralized to counter that. Right. And that includes in medicine, that includes in all the things. And Noster is really the first thing I've seen that isn't centrally controlled, you know, certainly X is Twitter, Facebook and all that. So this gives us a chance to build something where I can put something out and all my followers actually see it. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that a really great way to frame this for people, and you mentioned my blog post I wrote about how like these are the four things that'll save humanity.
Yeah,
I think a good way to frame this is we can just stick with geoengineering. Like, let's use that as an example of this thing that it's really hard to not feel hopeless when you look outside and you see you're being sprayed. You know, like it, like you said, it's hard to not feel like a victim. Like, man, they're like, what do? There's nothing you can physically do. So let's use that as a perfect example of something and apply these four things I've chosen. So Bitcoin, what does it do? It sucks out the value of the fiat system, which fiat is what fuels all these insane spending projects where, you know, everyone's seen the USAID stuff where it's just like this absurd list of crazy things that like they're just blowing money out of their ass. Like there's absolutely no rhyme or reason why. It's just like they're spending money like they feel like they have to just throw it somewhere. So they're throwing it all over the place, billions and billions of dollars. Bitcoin ends that because it puts a cap on the money and it forces responsibility. Because there's no more money printer. It gets rid of the money printer. So I think that, and you know, people, I'm sure have seen in the news how like there's these occasional phases of like the governments or BlackRock or whatever buying Bitcoin. And then, you know, all the newbies come out and say like, oh, like they're buying Bitcoin, so it's bad now. Like it's bad, you know, these are the bad guys are getting Bitcoin. I don't want them to succeed. But here's the thing is that it's the ultimate example of a Trojan horse because you have to get Bitcoin if you want to, you know, be part of the future. And they are being forced into it. They have to bend the knee to it eventually. And once they're in, like everyone is in, then the future is suddenly, or I guess the money itself is capped. So they're trapped into that system. So it's a little bit difficult to explain. I hope that's like a decent explanation, but like, will the bad guys get some Bitcoin? Of course they will. They will have to at some point. It's an open protocol, so everyone can get it. That's part of an open protocol, so everyone can do it. The difference is that once we are in that system, and by them joining the system, it just speeds up their own death. Because once you're in that system, you can't play the fiat games anymore. Being able to print on infinite money, or when in BlackRock's case, just, you know, tapping on the shoulder of the Fed or the Congress people and just getting unlimited money for everything from the taxpayers. They can't do that anymore with Bitcoin because they don't have a money printer anymore. So that's sort of a long-winded way of saying that Bitcoin will organically eliminate the stupid spending. It forces responsibility. So, you know, you have to actually act smartly with your money. You're giving up real money. There's no, like right now, I'm sure you've seen that infographic, like the four quadrants of, you know, how much someone will care about spending money. It's like, your money spending it for yourself, or your money spending for someone else, someone spending money for you. Do you know what I mean?
Have
you
ever seen that before?
Guy Swan did a really good video basically breaking that down of essentially saying that the government is spending other people's money that's not theirs, and they pay no consequence for doing badly with it because they have a money printer they can just ask for. So that is the absolute worst combination of incentives. They're never going to spend it well. It's always going to be nonsense. It's going to attract people that spend money on crap. And so Bitcoin just blows that up, and it forces responsibility. I've sort of gone circles in a couple times in that.
Oh, no, it's great.
I hope that sort of hits the point home. And I went Bitcoin first because I think that's the biggest one, you know, because, you know, it costs money to run all these programs to, you know, to fill up these planes with all those chemicals and fly them all over the fucking world. It's everywhere. Yeah. It's everywhere. So that has to be a huge expense. No one knows how much exactly it is. We see some occasional headlines about, like, you know, Bill Gates invests a couple hundred million in, you know, blocking out the sun, and, you know, the UK government, you know, signed some deal. They're going to use this many millions of taxpayers, and they're just getting absolutely hammered. I don't think anywhere on earth is getting hammered harder than the UK right now when you look at their pictures.
I think, you know, I'm just attracted to the culture around Bitcoin because I don't need just, it's not like I need nothing but optimists around me, but I also, I don't want a whole bunch of doomers telling me we can't win this, or humanity's fucked, or, you know, good luck, you know, trying to create a new money or whatever. I like what I'm seeing out of the Bitcoin developers and what's going on in the Noster stuff. I think we're only seeing, like, to your point earlier, we're really in the first or second inning. And I could see, I think if you and I had this conversation 10 years from now, we would be like, holy shit, we did not see all the development that was going to happen in these areas. Like, we were talking about stakes and sunshine and Noster, and we, you know, this stuff wasn't even thought of yet. And here we are. And I think it sets the foundation for a pro humanity, you know, pro earth, you know, that there's a lot of, like, great principles that can be anchored in it. And it is starting. And one of the things that's happening is they're just shining the shining light of truth into the dark corners of what is going on. And there is some dark, dark corners. I want to talk about that in a sec. But before we get to all that, you know, I saw carnivore. I've been circling around carnivore. I absolutely love grass-fed steak, especially high grade. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. My body just loves meat. And I remember when I was younger, I had a vegetarian girlfriend. So of course I was vegetarian for like a year to try to impress her, but I look like shit.
We all had one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Yoga girl who was like, you're not going to eat meat, are you? I'm not going to sleep with you if you're going to eat meat. I'm like, done. I don't need meat, man. So, but I look like shit according to all my friends, and I didn't feel good. I was kind of green. And then when we broke up, as soon as I started eating steak again, everything got better. Like, I could just feel like my testosterone, like, oh God, dang, this is so good. And, you know, I saw your before and after pictures. You have a before carnivore diet and after, and I'm like, holy shit. I mean, you looked fine in the before picture, but come on, you look transformed in the after picture, like, so much better. And I'm kind of a foot in both worlds. So I wanted to get your take on it, because it's a little scary to think of me eating nothing but carnivore. That seems too extreme. You know, we've kind of been taught, like, vegetables are good for you and all this stuff, but I think we've been kind of duped a little bit. I think they've said, you know, red meat's really bad for you, and people have internalized that belief. So even if we set that aside and go, hey, I love red meat, I love meat, it's another step to say, vegetables, are they still good for you, or are those not good for you? Because I know a lot of nutritionists are saying, no, don't throw out vegetables, right? And so I think carnivore diet may be kind of one of those extreme. I don't want to say only extreme people do it, but it's an experiment. And what did you find? And as you were down the rabbit hole, kind of like, what did you discover specifically about vegetables? Because I eat a lot of vegetables along with my steak. So I just wanted to get your take on that and how you navigated that. Did you go down the rabbit hole and then go, I'm just doing carnivore as an experiment? Like, how did that all unfold for you, Ben?
Yeah. So that was my second rabbit hole, I would say, after Bitcoin. And, I would say for anyone who wants to sort of go along that ride with me, I am very, you know, this is why it's so cool to have a podcast, because I can go back and actually listen to the episodes. I started my podcast, episode one, with Peruvian Bull, our friend, mutual friend, in August of 2023. And literally in September, I decided to start the carnivore diet as an experiment to see what happens. So, like, right as I start the podcast, it was going to be only about Bitcoin And all of a sudden I'm like going down this other new rabbit hole. So like the first, you know, 10, 15 episodes of the podcast are all about Bitcoin. And then it takes a turn into like a bunch of carnivore stuff. And I have a bunch of people on. So anyone who wants to really go down a full rabbit hole, I would just like go listen to my podcast, which is just my name, the Ben Werman podcast, and just find the, as soon as that you start seeing meat in the title.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I want to give credit to the guy who completely pulled me down this one pretty single-handedly. Well, first of all, the one who got on my radar in the first place was Saifedean Ammous, the Bitcoin Standard author. He is just consistently
like, is he carnivore? Is he a
carnivore? 100%.
Oh, yeah. I literally know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Really? Okay.
I saw him like clashing with people on Twitter with like the fruit and honey people, like, you know, saying like, oh, like you need fruit too, like honey's good for you. And he's like, no, that's bullshit. Like I just eat steak. No sugar's good for you. And so I was like, that's weird. Because at that point, like in 2023, I was sort of on the meat, fruit and honey vibe personally. Like, because there's like a huge wave of like health influencers that are really like gathering on that right now. And so that was where I was. And, you know, I started hearing Saifedean talk about it, and that's kind of interesting. But the guy I was going to mention earlier, the one who really was my rabbit hole guy down this one, who is like, to me, the Saifedean of the carnivore world, like the same sort of character. His name is Dr. Anthony Chafee. And if you go to my podcast and listen to my episode with him and just listen to that, that's probably my favorite episode I've ever done. I still go back and listen to it because this guy has just the most insane brain I've ever listened to. He just, like, when he opens his mouth, he just unloads like just a straight 30 minutes of just constant signal. It's like, how can I disagree with this guy? And he has this presentation he made on his YouTube channel called Plants Are Trying to Kill You. And essentially this presentation that he makes and all of his videos and his own podcast called The Plant Free MD, which I highly recommend, essentially go through that logical journey of understanding vegetables were never good for us. Fruit was never good for us. No plants were ever good for human beings. We are carnivores. Like, we actually are carnivores. And that's like his main thing he preaches. And I can sort of give you the gist of why for on the vegetable side and the fruit side, just sort of an overview.
Yeah.
For me, vegetables, it was easier to understand that those were not good. Because that's like the fruit and honey people pretty much agree with that. And that's where I was at that point, where you're kind of realizing, okay, this is the part of the plant that is like the body of the plant, like the leaves, for example. Like they don't want to be eaten in nature. So they fill those leaves with poison to not get eaten. Like they're stationary things. So their only way to survive, since they can't run around or fight back, is to fill themselves with poison. And so that's why in nature, when, you know, you see these crazy plants everywhere, even the vegans know you're not supposed to go in the forest and just eat trees and leaves, or you're going to end up very sick or sometimes die. But then they'll go to the grocery store and they'll see like a little plastic bag full of spinach that's like 99% the same thing, and think, oh, this is healthy. And so the question is, like, why do we think it's healthy in the first place? And it really just goes back to like farming. The agricultural revolution was where, you know, we had these farmers start to sell this stuff, and it started to really shift the paradigm. Like, as soon as food became more like a commodity of being sold. But yeah, just, I love keeping sort of the nature base though. So vegetables, it's the part of the plant that, you know, wants to stay alive to be able to reproduce. It doesn't want you to eat it. It's going to poison you. So there's no reason to eat it, period. It's full of plant toxins. Moving on to fruit. That one was harder for me to understand because
nature wants you to eat fruit. It seems like,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And this is what like the fruit and honey people still say is that, oh, it's super bright colored and beautiful. It tastes good. Like, don't you trust your taste buds? Here's the problem. Start with the nature perspective. Like I did for the other, plants want to survive and reproduce. Okay. Same premise we started with before. They create these fruit to get other animals to eat them and spread their seeds around. They don't, like, the tree does not exist to create healthy humans. They don't care about you. They want to reproduce. So they fill these things with some sugar to make it taste good so they can get things, other things to eat them and spread the seeds around. It's like they're kind of tricking you into doing it, you know? And so certain animals are very specially designed to have that stuff, like birds and berries, for example. Their digestive systems are very basic, which it makes it really good for those types of plants. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at, here's another aspect of it to understand is, and let me know if you wanted to stop and ask any questions. I'm kind of just throwing all kinds of stuff at you here. I'll throw one more point out is that when you look up any fruit or vegetable on Google and type in like 500 years ago and see what it looks like, every single thing that you get at the grocery store today, or even like the most organic farmer's market ever, you know, a watermelon, for example, like when you look at it now, it's this giant, you know, foot long, juicy beast of a thing.
Yeah.
If, like 500 years ago, let alone 5,000 years ago, it was like this tiny little mostly green like root. Mm. And, you know, you can repeat that for any of these things. Like tomatoes used to be like the super toxic little berry. Name any fruit, any vegetable out there. It's been heavily bioengineered by farmers, like I mentioned earlier, who are trying to sell more of them. So when they have their farm and they make a bunch of these fruits or vegetables, they will only keep the biggest, juiciest, sugariest one to reproduce the next season. So over thousands of years, you have a massive changing of these plants. And they are now completely man-made. And like I said, even if you're getting the most organic kind, we're not even talking about the glyphosate and the herbicides. That's a whole nother, you know, ball game.
Yeah.
It makes everything way worse, which is like 90% of what people are eating or more from the grocery store, probably like 99%, honestly. But like even considering that, if you get the absolute best kind, these are still bioengineered seeds that men have made to be super sugary and sweet. So every single fruit you see now is just a sugar bomb. And so that's a bit of a rant. Did I answer your question?
You did. Well, and
I didn't even get into why meat is good, but that's why like plants are in fact not healthy. They never were. They are just, you know, fiber and sugar. Fiber is literally bad for you. It's not good for you. It's just bulk that makes you shit more. And it gives you, you know, digestive problems. I don't know if you dug into my blog that much, but I just wrote a post about like digestive problems. If you're having digestive problems, stop eating plants because they are literally like pure fiber that can't be digested. There are people out there on YouTube now in the carnivore community now who there's this one guy named Kent Carnivore who had Crohn's disease for many years, a really bad gut problem.
Yeah.
To the point where he had to get his colon removed and have a colostomy bag put in. And so he thought, okay, this is interesting. Well, I mean, first of all, this sucks, but like, you know, we can now like do some interesting experiments here and see what happened. So he would eat different things and see what came out in the bag. And he would, you know, eat, you know, a bunch of meat, just a bunch of steak or ground beef or chicken or eggs or whatever. And nothing would come out in the bag or a tiny bit of liquid, basically nothing. And then he would eat like pineapple or, you know, broccoli or salad or any of these plants that people would eat. They would come out untouched in the bag.
Really?
Tony.
Oh my God.
They would, like he literally said, they would sometimes still have bite marks in them. Like literally the gut. So human gut pH is this. I need to like talk about this for a second. So gut pH is extremely critical for understanding what an animal is supposed to eat. Mm. So sheep and cows have extremely high pH. It's like 6 or 7 on the 1 to 7 scale.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 7, pretty sure. It's very high, very basic, which is basically made for fermenting plants. A lion, which is like the most stereotypical carnivore you could think of, super low. It's like 2. It's really acidic. Mm. It's made for only eating meat. You want to guess what a human is?
Low.
1.5.
Oh my God.
We are more carnivorous than lions are. Mm. We are like roughly, we have the same gut makeup almost as a vulture, which literally just roamed around eating rotting meat all the time. Like that's what we're supposed to eat. And this is why people like him who do this test and actually see what's happening in their gut when they eat these plants, it's not digesting any of it. We don't have the ability to digest this stuff. And this is why so many people have, you know, constipation, gut problems, indigestion, bloating. Oh my gosh, everyone in the world is bloated right now.
I know.
Like everywhere I go and travel, you know, you can just see everyone just has this big bloated belly. And it's just become so normalized. And what I want to tell them is like, bro, just stop eating plants. Wow. If you just go carnivore, like carnivore will fix that. That's literally fermentation in your belly. What's happening?
You're making me want to do an experiment like you did. But so you don't eat any plants or fruit? Are you all carnivore at this point? All meat products? Cause that's like,
yeah,
I'm like, holy cow, that is a drastic change in what I do, man. You know, I'm thinking like, oh, maybe I could get more meat and less veg, but you're saying now just go cold turkey, right?
Yeah. I mean, so I haven't had any vegetables or fruit now for almost 2 years.
Holy well, you look great.
Barring a few very rare exceptions. I do love experiments all the time. So every once in a while, yeah. You know, you know, there are some people that are like, oh, you have to be 100% all the time. Like for me, every once in a while, I'll just throw something in just to see what happens.
Yeah.
And I keep a journal, like kind of keep track of things. And it's always very interesting because after you've done strict carnivore for like 1 to 3 months, and then you eat something that seems so benign that you used to just have all the time. Like when I was in Mexico, the hostel I was staying at over there, this was last year sometime. I did just that. I had like 3 months of perfection of like just having steak, salt and water, nothing else, not even butter or eggs. Like that's the lion diet, which is like the most peak version where you don't even have any dairy or eggs, literally just ruminant, red meat, salt and water. That's it. I did that for 3 months and it was amazing. By the way, we can talk about how your taste buds change and you no longer crave those things after a while and you actually do love it every day. I know it sounds crazy to people, like how do you not get bored of this? Your cravings shift to the point where as I'm sitting here right now at, you know, 6:50 p.m. I haven't eaten since yesterday. I only eat one big meal of just a bowl of ground beef per day right now. I've been doing that for weeks. And I can't wait to go eat my ground beef. Like I'm craving it right now. Like after we're done, I'm probably going to go eat it.
Yeah.
I don't crave anything else anymore like I used to.
You know what's interesting, Ben, is I've been sober from alcohol for 12 years. And so I haven't drank in 12 years, but what replaced it, and this runs in my family, is a massive sweet tooth. So I have cravings of sugar, desserts, certainly fruits and honey and all that. I gobble that stuff up and it's kind of driven me, you know, in a certain way. So just talking to you, I'm like, God, how amazing would that be to like really take that on and say, you know, that is really that's just an extension of your addiction. You were getting lots of sugar with alcohol. That was terrible for you. But the sugar's not real good for you either. And you're finding sneaky ways to get it and pretending that they're healthy. It's blueberries, it's honey, it's blah, 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 you know? And it's like, maybe, but I always carry this kind of sneaky suspicion that I'm dancing around maybe the core addiction and there's maybe a better way to eat. And I've just not put my finger quite on it. Does that make sense?
You just absolutely nailed it. That's exactly what's happening. And that's extremely common too, is that when people give up one addiction, they kind of fall back onto a new one. And carbs and sugar are so commonly that thing. And here's one of the mind-blowing things that I learned while going down that rabbit hole as well, is the fructose molecule. So when you drink alcohol, it's just like, it's just straight sugar in your body. It's straight sugar. And fruit just breaks down to sugar as well. Like when you look at the actual molecules they break down to, it's all the same fructose. And so like it you really start thinking about these things in molecules, because all your body sees is molecules. Like we, with our eyeballs, we see, you know, a watermelon and a celery stick and a shot of vodka, and we see very different things. But every single carbohydrate, and all those things are plant-based, by the way, they all come from plants. Every single plant-based carbohydrate, which is all of them, they all turn into sugar in your body. It's a mixture of glucose and fructose. So that's why your body, like since you stopped eating or drinking the fructose from alcohol, it still wants that fructose. So you're just getting it from fruit now. And it's still going straight to your liver. This is the thing that people don't get, is that, you know, this is why so many like vegans and frugivores eating tons of fruit, they like not only do their teeth rot out of their skull, but they get like really bad liver problems because like all this fruit is just going straight to detoxing through the liver. So you're still beating up your liver by eating fruit. People don't know this. And yeah, I highly recommend trying this now that, you know, you're talking about this, because I think this will be a very enlightening thing for you. And just like any addiction, it's tough to get over it. You know, those first 2 weeks.
I'm not going to lie. There's some fear that's coming up even having this conversation with you.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you on the other side of the river going, how do I get over there without crossing this river?
it's challenging, but I mean, this is like the base camp for men mentality. Am I right?
Challenge
ourselves. We do these things.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's on recording now. You can't walk back it now.
I know. Well, and the proof is how you look. I mean, you look like you're an epitome of health, dude. You look fantastic.
Thank you.
Especially when I see the pictures of before your transformation. So I'm like, I want some of that, you know. And
I could be so much better though. Like my weakness now is like I don't exercise nearly enough. Like I'm so busy. Like I'm just constantly grinding out podcasts and blog posts and working.
Yeah.
And I know that's a total excuse. Mm. But you know, the times where I really settle in and get to go to the gym for a while, I feel great.
Yeah.
And you know, here's a crazy fact, something I noticed that you might notice this too. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 58.
58.
Yep.
I've heard so many people that were like 50s, 60s, 70s do this and have a similar experience to what I'm about to tell you. When I was just a few months into this thing in the carnivore diet, I remember the exact day I was sitting and working on my laptop like I usually do in this hostel. And I could just feel my arms were like more muscular. Mm. And I hadn't been exercising. I hadn't been lifting weights.
Mm.
Literally, just when you eat a ton of protein, it just starts to fill out your body. And there are people out there like seeing abs and having muscles for the first time just by going on a carnivore diet and not even exercising.
Wow.
Which is like a crazy, crazy thing for people, because, you know, you think about like, how could that be? I thought you needed to like lift heavy things to build muscle. But think about that example I used earlier, lions at the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
They're not exercising. No, like no other muscular animals like lifting weights in the gym, but they just have muscle.
Yeah.
And it's because they eat the correct diet. They're eating shitloads of meat.
Good. That's
and great. That protein is just going into your muscles and filling it out. And so for me, like I was noticing that, like, this is crazy. Like I look better. Like my muscles are bigger without even exercising.
Yeah.
And like once you actually start exercising, you keep it much more.
That's
and it
good.
Becomes much quicker to actually build that muscle. And for all the men out there, that should be all of them who care about muscle. Like
absolutely.
This is like a multiplier on your gains.
Yeah.
And Dr. Anthony Chaffee, the guy I mentioned earlier, is great for that. He's really into athletics. He used to play like, you know, semi-pro level rugby in Seattle. And he's from Seattle too, by the way, another Seattle guy.
We got
a bunch of legends in the house. But he has a bunch of people on his podcast who are like bodybuilders, pro athletes. And they're just like, this isn't fair. Like that I'm on this diet because I'm literally just crushing everybody all the time. They're constantly having to, you know, suck down these like sugar gel packs on these, you know, when they're running or exercising and, you know, carb loading before their meals and crashing out when, you know, when you're on a carnivore diet, you're just in superhuman mode.
That's awesome, dude.
Zero carbs, zero sugar. You're just like on a whole different level. And I didn't understand that until I did it myself. And I'm excited for you to do it and to hear back.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in. I'm gonna go listen to your podcast. I'm gonna give you a chance to just tell people where they can find you. But I just wanted to thank you. We're running out of time a bit. We didn't quite touch on everything. I wanted to talk about rabbit holes when they get dark. But I want to save that for part two. You'll come back again and talk to us, right? As we unfold.
Absolutely.
And
there's no way we're not doing more. Like we barely scratched the surface, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also you gave me a documentary. I want to go check out that documentary. That's going to open up a whole bunch of other things for us. But where can people find you and your work and your podcast? How can people connect and what you got going on right now?
Yeah, people can go to my website, benwerman.com. My last name is WEHRMAN. I have the Ben Werman podcast. I have my blog there where I write about all this stuff. And just in Noster. Like I know you talk about Noster. We didn't really get to go into that a lot yet. I'm sure we'll do that in the future. But super bullish on Noster. It's freeing speech for everyone. There's no one in charge of it. You can zap each other Bitcoin. It's a huge, powerful tool. I put it basically on the same level as Bitcoin in importance, which I never thought I'd say.
Yep.
Huge, powerful tool. I'm on there as well. Just same name, Ben Werman. And still struggling on Twitter, but mostly using it as a place to send people over to Noster.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good use for it.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. Just website, blog, podcast, socials. I'll be all over the place.
Did you see Jack Dorsey got suspended? Yes. I thought that I reached out to him on Nostra. I said, "Hey, at Jack," I said, "sorry to hear that. Join the club," or something like that. You know, I thought it was hilarious, man.
For listeners who may not know, the literal creator of Twitter, just he's being suspended on Twitter now for posting the bad things.
Yeah.
And so he posted this on Nostr, like a screenshot of his suspension. And it just, I mean, everyone just loved it. Like, this is such a great example of like why Nostr exists. Even he knows this, you know, the creator of the centralized platform is like completely all in Nostr, and you can't be more bullish on it.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, thanks, Ben, for coming on and sharing your insight and your wisdom. Love chatting with you. Feel like we could sit around the campfire and talk all night, and really look forward to further chats with you, buddy.
Looking forward to it. We absolutely will do more in the future. Keep in touch.
Okay.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I absolutely love it when I'm learning new things and new perspectives from a guest in real time. And I will be experimenting with this carnivore diet, man. It's super confronting for me. I just need to figure out when and what that looks like. I might need to get some buy-in from my wife to really make this a doable experiment, and I will keep you posted on all of it. Thank you, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.